Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Creation of the Kumaras and Others, text number 27. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sage Kadama, husband of the great Devahuti, was manifested from the shadow of Brahma. Thus, all became manifested from either the body or the mind of Brahma. Translation responsibly. Sage Kadama.
Sage Kadama.
Husband of the great Devahuti.
Husband of the great Devahuti.
Was manifested from the shadow of Brahma.
Was manifested from the shadow of Brahma.
Thus all became manifested.
Thus all became manifested.
From either the body or the mind.
From either the body or the mind.
Of Brahma.
Of Brahma.
Purport. Although one of the three modes of material nature is always prominent, they are never represented unalloyed by one another. Even in the most prominent existence of the two lower qualities, the modes of passion and ignorance, there is sometimes a tinge of the mode of goodness. Therefore, all the sons generated from the body or the mind of Brahma were in the modes of passion and ignorance. But some of them, like Kadama, were born in the mode of goodness. Nara was born in the transcendental state of Brahma. Om Gyanti Miyam Dasya Gyananjaya Shalaka Chakshurumli Tamyena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Mustapitam Yena Mutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dati Svaparantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Taparikamalam Shri Gurum Vaishyamsa Shri Rupam Sahajatam 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 Samsitivam Sahajatam Sahajatam Krishna Sahajatam Krishna Chaitan Devam Shri Raiha Krishna Paranda Sahajna Lita Shri Vishakam Samsita He Krishna Kuna Sindhu Dina Pantu Jagapate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostase Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sade Devi Vananami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevita Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vedantara Shri Rasadi Gauravatavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namaste, Sarasvati Devi, Gauravani, Jani, Nirvishesha, Shunyavadi, Pastor, Sahadesha, Tan. So, in today's verse, one of the sections in Canto 3 describing about creation, as we know. So, the creation of what? Creation of the material world. The spiritual world is not created, but the spiritual world is ever-existent. And it is only for the conditioned souls who misuse their independence that the material world is created. And the material world has a twofold function. One is to facilitate the criminal desires of the living entities to enjoy it separately from Krishna, or the Supreme Lord. And second is to rectify that criminal mentality by imposing various kinds of suffering on the living entity through many, many births. So when we're learning about the creation, then we're understanding pretty much what we've got ourselves into. And and how we can, through that knowledge of our, you know, the mistakes that we made in coming to the material world, how we can again return to the spiritual kingdom and not have to return. One who goes back to the spiritual world never comes back again. So the material world, or each material universe, is as described in Brahma Samhita, like an egg shape and a round little peep, you know. And it's practically like a spot compared to, and then we heard not too long ago that the coverings of the universe, each of them, the two elements, gross and subtle, covers each little universe or big universe. And the coverings are very, very thick, each one 10 times thicker than the previous one, starting from Earth up to the false ego. So it was funny one time, Keshava was describing how our, you know, this last covering, the false ego, is, you know, if we compare it to ourselves, we have all these coverings. The soul has all these coverings of earth, water, fire. And if our false ego was, you know, in comparison to the how it covers the universe, then our false ego would be here to crossways. Like, it's so big. And that false ego, the function, makes us think that we're the centre of the universe. Just like, I'm given glass, so I think I'm the centre of the universe. And like that, so there's all these coverings over the pure spirit soul. And the universe is also covered. And so, because it has so many dense coverings, then inside, naturally, it's completely dark. There can be no light. The outside of the universe is the material creation, there's the spiritual effulgence, Brahman effulgence. But that can't penetrate all these coverings of the universe. So then the big planet known as the sun god enters into that planet and provides illumination inside each universe. And in that material universe, the material nature, there's, as we know, three modes that condition us, condition the eternal living entity so that we forget our true identity. The conditionings of goodness, passion and ignorance. So just based on these three modes, if, you know, depending on, they can determine where we'll end up in the universe if we die. As Krishna explains, if we die in the mode of goodness, then we can go to the upper, higher planetary systems. If we die in the mode of passion, we remain in the earthly region. And if we die in the mode of ignorance, then we'll go down to the hellish species of life, otherwise known as animal species. So this is happening. This is Krishna is presenting the facts in Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic scriptures. So as we sing each morning, that material existence is a forest fire of the forest fire of material existence is blazing, and there are samsara. So the repeated repetition of birth and death, it's a never ending wheel of birth and death. And it's a forest fire that's just been raging, you know, it rages since the time of, you know, the beginning of creation. And so there's no cessation to that blazing fire of birth and death. So in today's verse we heard that Maitreya Muni is describing that, Prabhupada in the purport is describing that although one of the three modes of material nature is always prominent, they are never represented unalloyed by one another. Even in the most prominent existence of the two lower qualities, the modes of passion and ignorance, there is sometimes a tinge of the mode of goodness. So this is echoing Krishna's verse statement in chapter 14 that says Rajas Tamas to be Puya Sattvam Bhavati Bharata Rajasapam Tamas Chaiva Tamasapam Rajastata. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the modes of passion and ignorance. Sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance. And at other times, ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there is always competition for supremacy. So, this is whatever mode of nature that a living entity is situated in, it will always change. So therefore, the demigods come down again from the mode of goodness and come to the earthly realm, to the mode of passion, and again generate further fruitive activities and go up or down from there. So Lord Brahma's, we calculate time in terms of kalpas. Lord Brahma's daytime is known as a kalpa. So each one being 1,000 times a cycle of Satya, Treta, Dwapara and Kali. So it's going round and around and around and around. And that kalpa, you know, we don't consider one day very significant. So one day for Brahma is 1,000 of the ages, the four ages together. So it's a long time, and you know, in so many lifetimes that the living entity goes through. There's a nice verse in Bhagavad Gita which explains this phenomenon of repeated cycling in the wheel of birth and death. He says, Bhuta grama sa evayam bhutva bhutva phalite vajra agame pasha pata pravavacha agame. Again and again, when Brahma's day arrives, all living entities come into being, and with the arrival of Brahma's night, they are helplessly annihilated. So here we see that the helpless position of ourselves, of the living entity, that we're just in material nature with practically no hope of escape. We just go from every planet in the material world, you know, over so many days of Brahma, so many lifetimes, and it's obvious that we'll get to every planet in the material universe eventually. And we'll go through every species of life and every subspecies of life. From Indra down to the Indrikopa germ, as Lord Brahma says that there is a germ called the Indrikopa germ or insect, very small. Whereas Lord Indra is the king of heaven. So all of these are just dresses for the living entity. And you know, the living entity thinking himself to be the center and the enjoyer, and going through so many dramas that now I'm Indra, now I'm Indrikopa, now I have my Indrikopa family. And every single lifetime this is going on. And it's a whole illusion that we think we're the enjoyer. And, but actually, what we see is that every single lifetime we're being forced to suffer the threefold miseries. So we have problems from our family members. We have problems from our own body and mind. And problems from nature. So they're always plaguing us. There's never a moment when we're not being subjected to one of these miseries, at least. So therefore there's no happiness in the material world. In the fifth canto, there's obviously the description of the hellish planets. But we can consider that the whole material existence, whether it be the heavenly planets or the hellish planets, all of it is actually quite hellish for the living entity, because you know, where the soul is blissful by nature, our constitutional nature is eternally blissful, and therefore any mixing of if any kind of suffering that we have to go through is not according to our nature, it's against our constitutional nature. So when we see that, you know, people apparently enjoying the material world, apparently happy, we shouldn't take them so seriously. We shouldn't believe all of the photos that people put on Facebook, their selfies. We shouldn't believe them. That, oh, look at me, I'm happy with my friends. And, you know, usually it's just around a, or sometimes it's around a table of people sharing drinks. So they, you know, and they're all happy, intoxicated. So of course ignorance is bliss. But we should understand that the living entity is in that body and they don't, they're suffering actually. So unless we become Krishna conscious and show others the path of Krishna consciousness, then our suffering will be interminable. There will be no end. So that flickering material happiness is also actually suffering. It's going from good karma to bad karma. So it's like if we switch off the lights here, like at Mangala time the lights are off, and Tulsi Hari we switch them on. But if during Tulsi Hari the whole time we're flicking the light on and off, we'd get pretty annoyed. We'd kind of, it's a disturbance. Actually, this flickering happiness and distress is a disturbance to the soul. So we want steady happiness, spiritual happiness that is permanent and actually increasing. You know, sometimes the body is healthy or the mind is healthy, sometimes it's sick. And, you know, it's just going, the material world is duality, it's whole. There's no permanent situation. Everything changes up and down, duality, good and bad. So, and then we're born, so that taking birth is suffering. We never see a child come out of the womb happy. It's always, you know, crying, miserable. And then we grow up and so many diseases afflict us. You know, one of my nephews, he had cancer when he was just a couple of years old, 2 or 3, which he survived. But, you know, just from a very young age, we're afflicted with so many diseases. And then, you know, winter time comes, we're more prone to such diseases. And then we're just waiting, when's the next misery going to come? So, and then we get to old age. And, you know, every movement we make practically is suffering. Then we, of course, come to die. But through all of this, the living entity is so stubborn that we never give up our deep-rooted desire to dominate material nature and to enjoy this world. So that's why I said it's deep-rooted. It's like, you know, you have these palm trees flying around in a hurricane, you know, being pushed around and blown around, and they're very flexible. They bend over in the wind. But because they have strong roots, then they don't topple over, and because they're flexible. So in the same way, then, you know, the living entity, though we're suffering in so many ways, we never give up our desires to enjoy. So deep-rooted, like the roots of a tree. That's how you can see that the tree grows so tall, because it has deep roots and a strong foundation. And everyone's false ego is clashing with each other, because everyone wants to dominate everyone else, to try and control others for their own sense gratification. And that deep-rooted desire is epitomized by the desire for sex life. So that is, in the material world, the highest pleasure. So that really creates the hard knot in the heart of material desires. So there, you can just imagine you have a piece of rope and you just knot it and knot it. And sometimes, you know, I had to cut off my extra sticker. It got too much knotted. I couldn't figure it out. So I couldn't unknot it. So I was like, oh, get rid of it. And now, so there's so much knotted, so much knots of material desires in the heart that are just completely bound to material existence. And you know, you can just talk to anyone and you'll find out that people in Kali Yuga are just obsessed by sex life. And we see so many horrible activities based around this, such as, you know, child pornography and sex trafficking. And for the average person, especially in the Western countries, then illicit sex is completely normal. So, you know, men and women go out on the weekend, and it's just the way of life that they go out just to pick up, so-called. They find some casual partner, and this is life for the ordinary person in Kali Yuga, especially in the West, and everywhere else as well. You know, becoming more like that even in India. So, and even in old age, when you think that there's no more hope for material enjoyment, in old age the body's kind of dwindling, then no, still people are mad after sex life, and you know, they've the kids are left home, and you know, they're free to again try to enjoy material existence. And there's no question, there's no, you know, no one ever thinks about voluntarily retiring from sex life and engaging in spiritual life at the end of their life. No, they see it as a second opportunity. They had their youth, and they tried to have fun in their youth. Then they got kids and a family, and they were entangled in so many ways in their family life for so many years, so many decades. And then they finish working, their kids are left, and they have a second chance at enjoying just like the young guys again. So that is the how old people have kind of, they have that mentality nowadays. So we also hear that story of the king who even on his deathbed was attracted by the minister's daughter. And so in that way, yeah, this hard knot is just there in the heart, and it's very, very hard to remove. So everyone's hearts are very much polluted. Of course, we know there's so much pollution in the environment nowadays, but it's originating in people's hearts. People complain about big corporations and, you know, exploiting the environment and so on, but they don't realize that actually it's stemming from their own hearts. And you know, I remember seeing one time those pictures of in the oceans in the world, there is vast seas of plastic bottles just floating around, and they all kind of join together, and they go very deep into the ocean as well, and it's just like huge masses of like square kilometers of plastic bottles floating around in the ocean. And there's so much contamination and the air, so much pollution that, you know, like I go to the, if you go to the veggie market, then there's so many forklifts driving around, and they're all on petrol diesel engine. So you should all wash your veggies, because there's so much, like one of the store holders was showing me, like at his little desk area, who does all the sales, and there's so much soot and so on coming from the, accumulated from the forklifts, and also the trolleys, they're like petrol or something. So, and every single car, everyone has, especially in the West, has at least two cars, and you know, there's just one person driving them 80% of the time. No one car shares. And Every car all around the world, millions and millions of cars, all spewing out so much fumes every day. Just, you know, drive to 7-Eleven, get some milk. You know, it's just contaminating the earth like anything. And the water, you know, there's so many actually drugs and everything in the water, steroids and leftover, you know, because people take so many medicines and so on, and then gets in, that comes out in their urine and it gets into the water stream. So, and then, yeah, there's so much pollution. And then this, when people engage in so much unrestricted sex, then they're just throwing so much more dirt on their consciousness. And so, it's no wonder really that no one can understand spiritual knowledge. It's just a complete mystery, or, you know, they can't. They just speculate. There's many, many so-called spiritualists that they just encourage people in material success just to attract followers and fame and wealth, because they know people want to enjoy materially, so they concoct something about spiritual life and say, yeah, you can do this and become self-realized as well, and also become, have a successful career materially, and just to cheat people. So in such a situation then, we're completely dependent on the mercy of the pure devotees. You know, of course, Srimad Bhagavatam and is presenting, rightly so, a pessimistic view of material nature. But we don't stop there. Like I was talking the other day with someone, and they kind of got onto this theme of, you know, everything's degrading, it's all going to come to ruins, the whole world. And then one lady, she's like, oh, you know, there's nothing we can do. But Bhagavatam is not like that. Bhagavatam is showing the problem so that we understand what is the problems. But it's giving the solution, a very effective solution. Shinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shavna Kirtana. So to cleanse away all this pollution in the heart, we have a very easy process of hearing. And just by hearing from the pure devotees, self-realized souls, then we can, you know, with great eagerness hearing and enthusiasm, hearing what they have to say and trying to understand, then we can very easily cleanse away all of the contamination in the heart. So we have Srila Prabhupada, we've been hearing about Narada Muni. So Narada Muni, as it's mentioned in today's purport, Narada Muni is in the transcendental state of Ma, above the three modes of material nature. And of course, Narada Muni, as well as appearing in so many places in Bhagavatam, also appears in Krishna's Leela. He appeared to Kamsa and told Kamsa that actually the eighth son of Devaki is going to kill you. So he kind of gave the whole thing away, you know, because Krishna came to kill the demons and Narada wanted to hurry up the process, so to speak. But Narada Muni's, the other sons of Brahma, Atri, Marichi, Palastya, and so on, they're not in the transcendental position. They don't appear in Krishna's Leela. So we have to hear from such devotees who are very dear to Krishna. So the Srimad Bhagavatam has arisen, as we hear, just to dispel this darkness of Kali Yuga, where people are so much covered in ignorance. And that verse, it goes, Krishna sadamo bhagate dhamma gyana dibisaha kalo nashta drisham esha purana ko dinodita. This Bhagavat Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. So when Krishna left, then he took knowledge and religion. So there is no religion in Kali Yuga. There is no there's no Brahmanas to explain the Vedic scriptures. There is no proper leaders to lead us on the path of righteousness or spiritual life. No proper Kshatriyas. Everyone is just born a Shudra. So the only path in Kali Yuga is to accept the Vaishnavas and to accept Vaishnava scriptures. And in this way, you know, surmount the influence of Kali Yuga. So therefore, devotees need to just pray to be an instrument in the hands of such pure devotees as Srila Prabhupada and the disciplic succession who he's representing. And because in this very unfortunate age, then that is our only hope. Krishna consciousness is not like, well, we shouldn't take it to be like other mundane religions, some kind of pious activity where we, you know, offer our obeisances and Krishna will bless us with all material prosperity. That's not the point of Krishna consciousness. The point of Krishna consciousness is to be free from all our material distress by becoming conscious of Krishna and become transcendentally situated. So Krishna says to Devasamuni, or Lord Vishnu says to Devasamuni, after the Sudarshan Chakra had been chasing Devasamuni all around the universe, Devasamuni had come to Lord Vishnu asking forgiveness for offending his pure devotee Ambarish Maharaj. And Vishnu said, Sadhavariyam mayam sadhunam riyam toham ma anyate na janati naham tebyo manasapi. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I am always in the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. So this relationship between the pure devotee and Krishna, this is our avenue to spiritual success by finding out what does our guru want, and fulfilling their desires. You know, so many people they know of or have heard of great saints in the past from various spiritual traditions such as Jesus and Muhammad. Everyone knows him. You say that to anyone and they know who you're kind of talking about. But very few people understand their mood and mission. So it's only when we understand the mood and mission of the Acharyas and great saintly devotees, then we can make real spiritual progress. As Dagamidas Maharaj sometimes mentions that where Srimad Bhagavatam is showing us what is the heart of a Vaishnava, that compassionate attitude, and aligning ourselves with their desires as best we can, and not considering our own, you know, insignificant desires. They will be fulfilled automatically if, you know, Krishna understands our desires already. So if we just align ourselves to the desires of the previous Acharyas and Srila Prabhupada, then we'll be successful spiritually and, less importantly, materially. So even if the people that we try to help don't immediately take to Krishna consciousness, then still we ourselves are immensely purified by that endeavour. And those people too are eternally benefited by coming into the, having the association of a devotee who's trying to please their guru. So it's win-win. Just desiring to please our spiritual master is very, very purifying, even if we are not able to execute that. Because Conversely, desiring materially is very degrading. So the mind can be the best of enemies or the worst of friends. So by our desires for serving the spiritual masters are coming in the association of devotees. So this is the art that we have to learn, how to properly associate with devotees, not just being in a community of devotees. That's one step. But the next step is to actually associate with devotees, and that means firstly having a submissive attitude toward devotees and trying to understand what is this Krishna consciousness and how can I serve the mission of the previous acharyas. Now, tomorrow we'll hear that even, I was meant to give class tomorrow, but someone more qualified than me will give class tomorrow. We'll hear that even Lord Brahma is affected by this desire for sex life. And as we'll hear with his own daughter. That will be interesting to find out some more realizations on that. So I'll just stop there and see if there's any comments or questions. Yes, ma'am.
Do we explain new people that we need on the street or in the hospital that we don't actually engage in this activity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was talking with some people the other night and kind of came up and it's a tricky one, because it's so pervasive, all pervasive in this kind of society. But we can be honest and I was talking with my friend yesterday, we can state our position or our opinion, but in a kind of a neutral way, we're not saying, oh, you have to be like this as well. For my spiritual practice, I choose to abstain from illicit sex, and I find that works for me. It's kind of, I find it makes me more peaceful, I'm not agitated all the time by wanting to engage in that illicit activity. And honesty is good, and I guess because people kind of pick up if you're trying to hide something from them, and then as Keshe mentions, that people already have no trust in today's times. I guess people would appreciate honesty, but also at the same time we don't dwell on it so much. If someone asks, then we might tell them, but otherwise we probably wouldn't mention it, and we just kind of more focus on the benefits of mantra meditation, because that will purify people. People need some purification first before they can think about following regular principles, and just keeping them happy to be in the association of devotees, then they're taking prasad, so the prasad is purifying them also, we ourselves, before we became devotees, obviously had so many misconceptions and attachments and everything, but if devotees are kind enough to keep associating with us, then people have a chance, and we can't reject people just because they engage in illicit activity. Like that. Anything else? Yes, sir.
Prabhu, I'm not sure what you were discussing before I just came here. I had a question to ask. Where does the thoughts, what is the origin of the source of thoughts? Where does the thoughts come from? Because some thoughts are present, some thoughts are not so present. Is it from the soul or is it from Krishna? Where do the thoughts come from?
Thoughts? Thoughts are one of the activities of the mind. Thinking, feeling, and willing. So, yeah, they're originating ultimately from the soul. Like, the mind won't have any, you know, the mind is a subtle matter, and matter has no life without the soul. So that the soul is animating this body as well, and gross and subtle. And we're just, by our association with material nature, and the soul associates with different modes of material nature, then you know, different thoughts become more prominent. You know, so someone who's very associating with the mode of passion will, you know, be thinking along the lines of enjoying materially, acquiring money for sense gratification, controlling others, and things of that nature, identifying with the body, and so thoughts, and it's just a function of the mind to always be processing thoughts kind of whizzing through it, but shouldn't be attached to them. Only if we train our mind to think about Krishna, and we can become attached to Krishna by thinking about him. Otherwise, we can largely ignore the mind, and it's just there to kind of distract us, and with so many material desires. We need to train the mind to serve Krishna and think of Krishna, and change the quality of our thoughts and desires. Is that okay?
Well, my doubt or question was about thoughts coming from, if it's coming from soul. Soul is a pure entity.
Yeah.
If soul is a pure entity, why we get sometimes present thoughts and sometimes not so present thoughts?
Because we're conditioned. The soul is conditioned. Soul is the soul is pure. Yeah, every soul is pure. But it's like having a drop of water that falls in mud. The water is still pure, but it's mixed up with the mud. So we need to purify our consciousness. We can return to that original pure state. That's the process of bhakti yoga. To other processes, you can't return fully to that pure state of consciousness. Jnana yoga, you don't actually purify the soul to the fullest extent, because there's still that selfish desires. But by bhakti yoga and by chanting a mantra, then we can come back to our pure original consciousness, have pure thoughts just about Krishna, and pleasing Krishna. So yeah, that is possible, but now we've come in contact with material energy due to our desires. And so now there's mixed up with impurities. The impurities have to be, you know, cleansed away. Yes.
You know, like the soul is pure. Only one thing you can cure, which is impure, that's envy of Krishna. Once you get that envy, the thoughts will go in different way. They will start thinking, how can I enjoy? And then, when that happens, we get the false ego. We can't enjoy separately from Krishna. We'll get that false ego, which will put us in illusion. And once we are put in illusion, the thoughts of the soul, it's like a dream. You are put like in a dream, and then you are differently. That's not when you are, and that process of thinking is not the same as when you are awake. It's different. But it happens because you are a person. You are falling asleep, but you are thinking different way. And it says that material mind is the reflection of the real mind. Mm. So it's like a computer, you know, like your computer is set up. You have a person working behind the computer and you have a computer. Computer is working in a similar way the way the mind works. But it's not a lie. It will tell you, do you want to delete this? Do you want to do this? Do you want that? And they have programs. It has programs because of the person, because of the soul has made a decision. And then someone has made the computer to work on the same principle as our way of thinking. So it's actually the material mind, and in the computer will go whatever you put it in, and then what you will think. That's how we get thinking in different modes. We think in mode of passion, person will think differently. A person in mode of ignorance in his mind will think, I want to destroy, I want to kill, I want to, because of the things that you put in the computer, what you download in the computer, what you associate through the sense objects. You know, if you know, the computer has also sense objects. They have touch screen for touch. You have cameras for eyes. You have the microphone for the, you know, for the sound or whatever. So whatever you put in the computer, that's what's going to go in the computer. So similarly, what goes in our mind depends on what we put in our to our senses. What we watch, what we hear. So if you hear the objects. Sense objects in the mode of ignorance, like if you watch violent movies, if you do anything, that's what's going to go in your head and that's what's going to go wrong in the head. That's why you say nicely, if you think of Krishna, this is transcendental mode of modes, and then that will give you peace. Because, and it's a pure science, you can't ignore the mind, because that's what we have put in the computer. You have to make a choice what you are going to enjoy with your sense objects. That's what's going to go in your mind. It's very hard. We make a choice, all our senses to be connected to Krishna, that's why we have peace. You can't have peace without it.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Is a devotee of the Lord.
Nagamini?
Dudvasami. He is a devotee of the Lord, and he made an offense to Krishna Maharaj.
I didn't research fully into that last time. I just, because that verse is very famous, that Vishnu says he's the devotee's his heart, and the devotees don't know anything other than him. That's a very famous verse, so I wanted to just include that. I didn't read the whole past time. I'm not sure of that actually. Yeah. I didn't. Bhakti Sadhguru. Devasamuni is a devotee. Oh, mystic yogi. Yeah, not quite. I mean, some kind of devotee. Maybe not a pure devotee. Not a bhakti yogi. Three kinds of transcendentalists, yogis, kyanis, and devotees. So I'll stop there. Kontrai Shimai Padu Tam Ki. Shila Prabhupada Ki. Jai Govardhana Devi.